Taylor's conspiracy that relies primarily on colored teams for expanding its sphere of influence. It is a system which has conscripted vast human and material resources into the building of a tightly knit, highly efficient machine that combines military, diplomatic, intelligence, economic, scientific, and political operations. Preparations are concealed, not publicized. Mistakes are buried, not headlined. Its dissenters are silent, not praised.
Millions of people just living out their lives. Oblivious. Choice is an illusion created between those with power and those without.
I drink your milkshake. I drink it up.
Thank you, John Larson. I receive your kind words on behalf of all of our courageous members of the House of Representatives who want the best for the American people. And what we can do that is best for them in the next 24 hours is to pass affordable, accessible health care for all Americans. The best for all Americans is to have 32 million more people to have health insurance in our country. The best for...
Piece of stinking filth.
Shh, sitting a shop. This is AJ of the InfoWars. Listen to the Shaliak. This is Alex Jones of InfoWars. Listen to Shaliak on the Cold Reality News and Report.
This is the coolest thing I have ever seen.
Well, hello there!
All right. Welcome to the program today on this Sunday, August 21st. It's 10:02 on the East Coast of Nightmarica, and this is Cold Reality Radio on the UCY.TV broadcasting network. Whatever we are here, we've been told that we're so many different things and that we are not. And, of course, last week we spoke about evolution and Darwin and... whatever we are, we feel the need to be entertained. We feel the need to, we like to watch movies. We like to watch television shows. We like to listen to music. We escape to different areas of reality through these platforms. And in accordance with that, it's also a conduit to which we are fed negative information, things that are not true, and the technology that has been used to do this is it's just fascinating. You know, when we hear the word technocracy, it's been going on for some time. And then, of course, we've been told that, you know, that this technocratic elite is coming to, you know, fruition, and they're going to do all these things. And, you know, science has been bastardized, which we know. It turns out that obviously it's been going on for much, much longer than we realize. We have information, obviously, that is out there on the intranet. So what we're going to be talking about today is with Clint Richardson of the Corporation Nation. And you can find his book, his life's work, over at strawmanstory.info. And as I said, and I say every time, every week that I have Clint on or Clint hosts for me, I'm truly blessed to have crossed paths with Clint, because he's really opened my eyes to so many different things. And I've been misled, and I was kind of syncing up with Clint about 10 minutes ago, saying, "Hey, I want to talk about this. Talk about that today." And, you know, I've been in early on doing the whole Alex Jones thing and kind of just, you know, repeating the garbage that comes out of the InfoWars camp. You know, 80% truth, 20% turd. You know, you got a shit sandwich. And so as we move further down the road, I've been lucky enough to be to have the whatever it is, the universe, karma, whatever it is. I've always just meant to do well, to do good for people, and I think that that's what kind of ultimately led me in the direction to cross paths with Clint Patrick Jordan. So Clint, welcome today to the program once again.
Thanks, man. I think that what you're trying to get across is that there's a point where you know, when you first start out in the notion of what they say, waking up, which, you know, most of these phrases I've even the phrases that are used by the Jones camp are, you know, he says, don't be a sheep. I'm like, well, wait a minute. The Bible says be a sheep, actually, be, you know, follow the shepherd. But Jones is like, no, be a goat, you know, be a he-goat, you know, charge forward. There's all kinds of things there's all kinds of problems with this whole, you know, alternative media model, the info warrior kind of thing. I mean, we could do a whole show probably just breaking down, you know, the fact that there's so much information being spewed, but nothing's being done about it. And that in that way, it's merely a disclosure or a revelation or an apocalypse of information that is literally being put forward to you, but in no way that can be officially or legally used in any kind of chain of custody or chain of evidence or anything like that. You take a YouTube video or an Alex Jones video to an FBI agent and say, hey, can you investigate this? They're going to laugh at you and kick your ass out of the door, you stupid American, right? Because you know nothing about the legal system. You don't know that you have to create a dossier and do all the work for them before they'll even touch a case, which is why 9/11 is never investigated. It's why, after all the years of us talking about all these things, 9/11, right? Of course it's not investigated because you never actually did anything in the legal sense. You never did anything correctly. You just talked and talked and talked, and you said, look, this third-hand YouTube video or this fourth-hand, you know, thing is proof. No, it's not proof. That's the problem. You see, you never actually said, okay, here's what George Bush did. Okay, here's what Dick Cheney did. Okay, here's what this Saudi guy did. Okay. And you never put that into a dossier, and you never submitted it to an FBI agent for him to investigate following the chain of custody and the chain of evidence. You never did anything right. And that is why Alex Jones is there, to make sure that you never do anything right, but you talk a whole lot of shit. And isn't that the American way? Isn't that the reality show that is America? Talk shit, but never really do anything about it, right?
I'll talk, no action, America.
Absolutely. So I think,
you know,
I think what you are referring to in yourself and people who end up in this side of the spectrum, who surpass all of that brainwashing that's happening in what I call the mainstream alternative, it is basically that you discovered that you wanted to know the truth, the real truth, the truth that actually harms you instead of makes you feel better about yourself, the truth that's not patriotic at all in any way, shape, or form, the truth that, you know, the kind of truth that makes you not wave the American flag, the kind of truth that is detrimental to your own opinions and your own, you know, what you've grown up to accept and love or believe in, you know, that's the kind of people that, and it's not a lot, it's the remainder, it's the remnant that gravitate towards what we're doing and what very few other people, I think, are doing, that actually get get through and see the brainwashing on all sides, not just on one side. You know, you join the InfoWar, you join Fox News, you join Glenn Beck, you join all these sort of teams or sides, and then you realize, I think you don't want to be on a side, you just want to know what's going on. And the fact that it harms your own personal outlook or opinion and crushes it and makes you cry is actually a good thing in your mind once you actually get through the pain of learning. You know, that's the kind of people that gravitate towards this end of the spectrum. And like I said, I don't think it's a lot of people, honestly.
Yeah, it seems to be very, very few that get past that. I mean, I know that there's a lot of people that you hear out there that are anti-Jones and anti-InfoWars. And then, of course, when I was, just running with the pack, it was, it was me saying, these people, they're just attacking Jones because he... You know that he's over the target, and for the most part, it's just when you sit back and you look at it from my standpoint now, from your developed and researched standpoint, you just see that, man, it's just there are layers to the deception, and it's just like where does it end? Where does it stop? Because everybody, almost everyone involved, is supporting their own demise and their own downfall in so many different ways.
And I think that's the definition of Satanism, honestly. I mean, that's to be adversarial to everything that is good for you and good for others and good for even society. I think that's what we're living in right now is a very quote-unquote satanic. And, you know, again, don't let the word fool you. The word satanic only means adversarial to nature or adversarial to the harmony and design of nature. You know, that's all it means. And when you've developed an entire system of media, entertainment, you know, we were talking about the music frequencies, all of these things are specifically, provably designed to harm you, right? And how can you think we're living in anything else? And, you know, I realized the other day, Shelley, and I was writing about this because I think it's so important to realize. It's the only way I can really describe what I've discovered, because it's so hard to tell people about what the Bible says, because they've got it in their head that the Bible is evil and that everything else is good, right? Because the church is so frickin' evil, the institution, the corporation, you know, the Roman denominations of all the Christian quote-unquote churches are so damn evil, they equate that the Bible must therefore also be evil. And that is the most amazing trick the devil's ever played. Again, devil means evil genius, man. It doesn't mean some caricature that the church artists drew.
But they have to feed that into this whole spiritual thing. They have to humanize or create this evil, you know, this evil thing with the pitchfork, and you know
they did, and they it's not only just, you know, it's not always just that, because I mean, think about this, right? Think about what are our replacements, you know, what is our religion, right? Because remember, The notion of, when you look up the terms in the legal language is very difficult to find things, which is why it takes so long to do all this research. But when you find the legal definition of something that it doesn't want or cannot touch, it's a real treasure. And so you find definitions like religious man. You know, you notice that every time something is like, you know, all men are equal, all men have unalienable rights, all men. Well, okay, but the legal system has nothing to do with men. It has everything to do with fictional persons, statuses, vessels, not men. And so when you're acting in that vessel, in that person, you lose all of the things, well, you don't lose them, but you're agreeing contractually to not have those rights because you're operating in a commercial vessel.
You abandon.
Operating in their
property. Your rights. You willingly abandon your rights.
Willingly abandon God. And when I say that, I'm saying you're willingly abandoning the law of nature, the source, the life force behind all authority and power. You're abandoning that. And you're saying, I'm taking the state as my God. And it's why the Bible says all the gods of the nations are idols. You know, you gotta think of these kind of things. When the Bible says all the gods of the nations are idols, obviously it's, you know, that word God is talking about kings when you translate it. It's not, you know, it's talking about kings and magistrates, judges, and all that thing. So what I figured out, man, is that we are actually, we've been satanically molded, adversarially molded away from the Bible in every way, shape, and form. Whether it's the dog Latin, the English language, which is an illiterate mongrel language, according to Mark Twain, right? Whether it's the church that makes you either hate the Bible because you hate the church, or love the church and therefore hate the Bible because the church doesn't teach the Bible. Everything is designed, if you notice, everything is designed to keep you away from understanding the Bible. The schools have now completely obliterated the Bible from teaching. Why? Because if kids were to learn what was actually in the Bible, it would be detrimental to this system. No, you got to put them in front of a TV and you got to train them with all this crap, you know, the Snorks and the Smurfs and the, you know, whatever it is today, the computerized animation. And so here's the thing, man. I really want people just to consider what I'm saying here in a purely, just in a purely spiritual way here, not religion, not anything else. What the Bible is supposed to be, why Noah Webster and all these other people, all the founding fathers, you know, for all intents and purposes, fairly evil men, but they understood the Bible. They understood that the Bible is the only thing that keeps men free from their own entanglements, their systems, their nations. That's why they are readers of the Bible, because we have gotten into a system where at one time people followed what was called true religion, not the religion of Rome. You know, truly following what the law that is the Bible. And I want people to understand that the Bible is the law. It is the epitome, the foundation of all law. And you're supposed to follow it religiously, right? And I've been saying this to people, trying to get this sort of meme going that you're, you know, the Bible is not religion, but you follow it religiously, just like you drink a cup of coffee every morning religiously, or you watch your sitcoms, you know, reruns religiously every night before bed, or you watch the news, or you listen to Alex Jones, for God's sake, religiously, right? That is the action of religious. And so people used to follow the Bible law religiously, and that's why they had such abundance and such, you know, despite what Rome was doing. As Rome was falling, the Christians were actually doing really, the true religion people, the true followers of the Bible, the natural law, were doing very well because they had a support group. They supported each other, they loved each other, and all who came to be part of that. So what's happened to us? Well, that same religious action has been, like a powerful force, right, has been collectively taken from us and redirected. So instead of religiously following the law, which would of course be totally against the church and state, we have been redirected. And I want you to think about, let's take Christmas for example, right? We all know what Christmas is supposed to be. But what do we worship on Christmas? We worship Santa Claus. And the reindeer and Rudolph and the Christmas trees and all these pagan or fictional tales, symbols of things that are nonsense, essentially. Stuff that comes from Germany, etc., from the pagan traditions, right? We have been entrained literally to cause that to be our religious law. And when I say that, I mean that we insist. We absolutely, I mean, we will get over into fights with people. We'll punish our children, even, if they reveal the secret that the whole thing's a fucking lie. Santa is a lie. The reindeer, they don't actually fly. Santa doesn't come down the chimney and deliver gifts, right? But we religiously, literally religiously, every freaking year, we go out, even though we can't afford it, we go and we buy gifts for all of our friends, and we support this entire commercial thing. We celebrate Black Friday as our holiday, our most treasured holiday, even above Christmas. We do all of these things religiously every year. We look forward to it. We get our Christmas tree 3 weeks early, and we decorate it. We have parties around the decoration. And the whole time, not one iota of what the holiday actually means. Now, that to me is the perfect. You could take Easter and the Easter Bunny, you could take the Tooth Fairy, where we lie to our kids openly, just freaking lie. We build a whole entertainment structure around the lie. We entrain those children until they're the age of, what, 7 or 8, when they finally get a little bit of reason behind them, they say, wait a minute. This doesn't make sense. Why are you freaking lying to me? And then they're ruined for a little while. They're just absolutely destroyed that their parents were lying to them, and there's no actual Santa. But then they start playing along with the lie. And the lie continues generation after generation. So my question to you, Shali, and to anybody listening, and this is the point I've been trying to make, and it's so hard to make, but if the Bible is just as much of a fable, just as much of a story, not a historical document, but a poem, that's why it's written in verses, right? Why is it so difficult if the end result of the Bible is spiritual awakening and peace and harmony and charity and love, right? Why is it that it is so easy to follow a known lie, a humongous, ridiculous lie that the entire, you know, commercial world comes alive for 3 or 4 months at the end of each year? The news reports on it. I mean, it's just this. And then why can we get into that type of situation, that kind of lifestyle, where we actually worship and actually fulfill the Christmas quote-unquote spirit of Santa Claus, and we revolve our lives around it, we have family get-togethers, we do all these things? Why is it that it is so difficult then for you to accept that, yes, the Bible is also a fable, the Bible is also a story told about a man, an anthropomorphized, personified man, just like all the authors, you know, used to write, a man that you're supposed to follow, his actions that should be your actions so that you can be a son of God? You know, that's the story. Why is it that it is so difficult for us to take the Bible and say, you know, okay, let's abandon the Easter Bunny. Let's abandon the Christmas. Let's abandon what we know are lies. Hell, let's abandon the InfoWar. Let's actually develop a culture like used to be around this story. Yeah, sure, we know, most of us can comprehend that the guy, you know, if you believe or you don't believe, it doesn't really matter. The point is, you're taking a story that is a moral story, just like you would take King Arthur or Robin Hood. You don't have any problem modeling your moral values around these stories that have been told generation after generation. The Indians tell their children all their stories about the great spirits and all that. Why is it that everybody is so absolutely opposed to learning, cherishing, and living by the one fucking story, the Bible story, that actually is acknowledged in the frickin' law, in the law of nations and everywhere else, that would actually set people free. The one frickin' story, the one superhero that you actually would become, why is it that that is the one thing we say, oh, no, no, I don't want to have anything. I want nothing to do with that. Absolutely freaking nothing to do with that. That's a lie. I don't believe the Bible. But you watch movies, you watch television, you read stories, the Lord of the Rings is like, you become a nerd because you worship these false stories. You live your life according to the morals they teach, which half the time are satanic. But the Bible, no, 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 can't have that. Now to me, Charlie, that is one of the great works. That is one of the great works of the devils, which are men, attorneys specifically, right? That is one of the greatest tricks, the greatest diversions, the greatest satanic efforts ever made, because we've literally been taken away from the only book, the very foundation of our system of law. We've been taken away from that in such completeness that we actually think that the Bible is something evil. You know, that is incredible. And I speak for myself here. I mean, this is what I've been trained my whole life. Whether it's entertainment, the church, I've been trained. I know others have been. I look around and I'm like, what is wrong with us? Why? How did we get into this spot where we can participate in such an open lie as Santa Claus or the Easter Bunny, and yet we completely demonize the only actual truth, which is the Bible, the natural, self-evident, self-existent truth that is in the Bible, the parabolic moral teachings of the Bible, which, trust me when I say, are absolutely the key to peace and self-existence, like freedom, true freedom. To me, my friend, taking all religion out of it and just understanding the notion of practicing something religiously, whether it's coffee or tea or me, I mean, that, to me, brings on such passion and frustration that I don't even know. I don't know how else I can explain it to people other than to say, look, the Bible is the law. You're not following the law, and therefore you're suffering this massive, massive propaganda, scheme, which is going to keep you away from the law. It's going to keep you away from your natural self, and it's going to keep you away from any spirituality or freedom that you'll ever attain, because even the law says that that is the only freedom. The religious man is the only thing that the legal law cannot touch.
Well, they bastardized it. I mean, we know that they bastardized it. And, the evangelicals and with the Ted Cruz's and all these guys that are – and that's just one small portion of it. But we see what's going on with, the Vatican. We see the abuse, the sexual abuse. People steer away from it from that standpoint. You've got the people that look at people. Like, if someone heard you on a street corner today just talking about the Bible and saying exactly what you just said over the last 10 minutes, they would call you. They would say this guy is an extremist. That's the way that you would be. That's the way that people would see you. Obviously, I don't. Obviously, the listeners out there, people that have listened to you on RBN, they know where you're coming from. People don't have the discernment to be able to break these things down and understand. And it's all part of the entrainment of demonizing what is good and worshiping what is bad and awful.
Well, what amazes me, too, is that you go, you know, people, even the people who are worshiping the Founding Fathers as gods, right, the worshiping these people in history, you know, you read the quotes of the Founding Fathers, they tell you what's going to happen. The tyrant tells you what is going to happen. Ben Franklin, man, he says, man will ultimately be governed by God or by tyrants. Okay, there it is, right there. He also said, freedom is not a gift bestowed upon us by other men, but a right that belongs to us by the laws of God and nature. All right, these guys knew this when they were creating that which is completely opposed to it. So as long as they stayed free, they stayed private, they could still create a whole commercial system that, you know, it's like taking the Bible and saying, okay, I get it. Now I'm going to create this horrible, horrible system. And they've been doing it for 5,000 years. This whole system of getting you to become the property of another by inhabiting this false persona, right?
Right.
I mean, to me, if you go back and you read these founding fathers and all these, they tell you straight up all the time, over and over, that your God is either going to be Jehovah, nature, the laws of nature, or it's going to be the state. They tell you that over and over and over, but no one seems to pay mind to that. And so they drape the flag, the United States flag, or, you know, the Olympic, whatever Olympic team you're on, is your freaking nation, right? They drape it over their shoulders and they parade it around while they're talking about God, having no clue that their God is the tyrant that is the freaking district, the nation. You know, what's amazing about the Olympics, I mean, I don't know, did you ever see the Hunger Games at all?
Oh, my God, yeah. I watched it mostly because I knew that it was entrainment through entertainment for the younger generation. So,
sure.
Absolutely, yeah.
Think about what the Olympics is, man. You see, we call them countries, right? We say, oh, United States, the country, or Germany, the country. They're not countries. Okay, a state is a country. Even a province up in Canada, etc., would be considered sort of like a country. The United States, people, Washington, D.C. is called the District of Washington. The arms of Washington family, right? The would-be king and all of his bloodline possessors. You got to understand, man, the Olympics is just a watered-down, censored for family entertainment Hunger Games. These are districts that are competing. These are slave colonies. Colony means plantation or farm. You got to understand, this is the Hunger Games. It's just not to the death.
Not to the extreme, that's
it's
right.
Districts.
Yeah, I never correlated those, but yeah, I mean it really truly is, and of course this time around that we see so many things happening with the whole Russian doping scandal, and then you see these jackass swimmers that go over there lie about being assaulted at gunpoint and vandalize, you know, Americans going into another country, but not a country. And then they go there, they do all this, all the vandalizing that they did, and then they get called on it. It really truly is a microcosm of the absolute just hubris that comes from the American ideology that, you know, we're number one. So they go over there and do that, but yeah, absolutely. The Hunger Games. It did not occur to me, but at some point there, it will be to the death, I'm sure.
Well, I mean, yeah, you got to wonder when is UFC or extreme fighting or I don't know. You know, they're coming out with movies, you know, that are... There's a new movie that is, Are You a Player or Are You a Watcher? I can't remember what it's called, Pulse or something like that, where the girl accepts, she becomes a player and she starts getting monetary contributions for doing really stupid shit, you know, going around.
And they're hanging from...
That's
one of the Roberts, the daughter... of Roberts, and then of course the niece of Julia Roberts, which is most likely another one of these genealogical bloodline families.
Sure.
Mm-hmm.
I mean that's Hollywood for you.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
What I never understood about that is as I was going through all the Hollywood people, you know, and I see that they're all related. You know, whether it's all the CEOs of corporations, all the philanthropists, you know, the wealthy people, your Warren Buffett's, that kind of thing, whether it's the vice presidents or the presidents.
Warren Buffett, cousin of a Barack Obama.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it doesn't matter. Whether it's the singers, you know, Celine Dion, Justin Bieber, and Beyonce, all cousins, right? Very close cousins. Well, it doesn't matter. They're all in the same blood, all related to one another. But when I look at the Hollywood people, they're all Jewish. So they change their names, right? So you have to look at, you know, Wikipedia is actually a good source for that because it says, you know,
yeah, what's your name?
Roberts, and then Nee, the actual, you know, name.
That's her last name, Nee?
Well, no. Nee means, like... replacement name, like so. Roberts would be the stage name, and Nee would be the real name.
Why did they do that? On a platform such as Wikipedia, why would they actually show the person's real name? I know they're trying to.
No one's ever going to do the kind of research that I've done.
Right.
Genealogy is just now popular, and I think the only reason they popularized it is because they want everybody's DNA. They want to collect DNA from everybody, so they're like, hey, find out where you're from. They're going to tell you you're all from Africa or something, but they want your DNA, and so they're sending out kits now for people to send their DNA, and that, it's a big scam to basically... I heard a Chinese guy, or a Japanese guy, you know, they're talking about the CRISPR thing, and he's like, we're going to collect, and we're going to... What's the word? We're going to genomically, get the genome, basically, of every person on Earth.
Right. Yeah.
Right? That's nuts. That's crazy. And so that's, you know, they gotta do it in a way that's clandestine. So
obviously people get blood work done all the time. You can either have it done at your doctor's or you can have it done at, the hospital, or they have places like LabCorp. I don't know if you have any of those LabCorps out
there. Sure, but no one ever asks. No one ever seems to ask.
Yeah.
Why are you taking so many vials of blood? You're testing me for this, this, and this. You only need two vials. Why are you taking three or four vials? Well, because they're selling your blood.
Yeah.
They're selling your blood to freaking weapons corporations and shit. I mean, it's frightening when you actually start looking into it.
See, that's another thing. That's right now. Like, someone listening to this would be like, that's just unbelievable. And it's, you know, people have this childlike mentality. Like, they don't understand what's going on. I'll give you a quick example of medicine and a total comparison. And then we'll start right where we left off. Ex-boss of mine had a mini stroke. Was taking Nexium, okay, the purple pill for proton pump inhibitor. And I shared this with Patrick this week, and he of course I got some incredible information and insight on it. Current coworker, not even 35 years of age, Monday. I wasn't in there Monday or Tuesday, but then Wednesday, I'm back. He's there. Turns out he was out half a Monday and all a Tuesday. one guy said, "Hey, how did you make out the other day? Are you okay?" And he says, I don't know. I just started slurring my words. I just started slurring words." And then the guy who's an EMT said, "Dude, you had a freaking mini stroke." So right away, my mind starts, you know, doing what it does, which is, you know, going to be illegal soon. And I say, "Hey, are you on any meds?" And he said, "Yeah, I'm on the Nexium." And I was like, "Holy shit. Nexium it wasn't a surprise to me, but the correlation between someone that I knew that was in their 40s taking Nexium mini stroke and then not that much longer later a pulmonary embolism that he survived, but now this much, much younger guy on Nexium for 15 years has a mini stroke, but he went to the hospital, he did this and that, and then he's aware now, but he also is going through this thing now where he's going to try to wean himself off of this drug. And my chiropractor knew that you take it every day. This is something that you take every day. And then in the second week, you take 6. In the third week, you take 5, and you wean yourself all the way down to just 1, and then you stop doing it. But I have genuine fear for you know, my coworker, heck of a nice guy, super, super awesome, you know, person to work around, and not assuming, you know, the perfect coworker as far as, you know, not going to overstep boundaries, not going to understep, but, you know, that type of thing. There's good people in the world that are being poisoned. And but I just had to throw that in before I forget to say that.
You know, so this is a good example of the craziness that so you gotta see what is this drug doing, right? So the actual drug that's in Nexium, or so it's called esomeprazole. All right, it's a protein, a proton pump inhibitor, which reduces stomach acid. That's what they're telling you is the purpose of it, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, but okay, but what's it actually doing? And so this is one of those things that I did a show on. I had a guest on my show, what was her name? It's a very important topic because it's something that I suffer from, which is a lack of the cytochrome P450 family, which is what you specifically 2D6. But there's all kinds of different P450 enzymes, right?
Mm-hmm.
And what these enzymes do is they are called metabolizing enzymes. So when you take a drug, you need all these cytochrome enzymes, P450 enzymes, to actually metabolize the drug. And what happens is, you know, 10 to 20% of people in the entire world don't have some of these. And there's a lot of them, right? There's so many. They don't have those enzymes to be able to actually digest, break down those drugs. And so you get a toxicity of that drug in your system to where it starts affecting you in a major way, because you're called a non-metabolizer, right?
Mm.
And it can cause all kinds of havoc in your body. For me, I took a drug, and the worst possible side effect of that drug was to stop breathing.
Right, right.
I only took a little bit of it just to test it out, because I knew there was something wrong with my the way that drugs affect me, any you know, even alcohol. And so I stopped, you know, I had to manually breathe. I had to think about breathing in, and I had to think about breathing out. I stayed up all night. Someone helped me out and made me stay awake and breathe. Otherwise I would have died, because my breathing had literally stopped. My autonomic system had stopped because of this drug. And so what is Nexium? Well, here's what this is what it does. It's a competitive inhibitor of the enzyme CYP2C19, and therefore it may therefore interact with drugs that depend on it for metabolism. Remember, the cytochrome family, which is that one I just read, is responsible for metabolism. So when you have these shootings at schools, and you have these, Phil Hartman thing and all that, all those random shootings, you find out they're always on antidepressants, and you find out, according to what's her name that I interviewed, and Anne Blake Tracy, who's an expert witness that I interviewed, and she lives here in Utah, they're always absent of the proper metabolizers, the proper cytochrome P450s, in order to be able to take the drugs safely. And not that there is a real, safe taking. Right. So Nexium inhibits the metabolizer CYP2C19, which is cytochrome P450-2C19, and that's its abbreviation. It's an enzyme. It's a protein, in other words. You remember Patrick talking about the oxidate, the super mutase oxides and all that stuff?
Yes, oxides, just mutase, yeah.
Exactly. It's part of the oxide system, and it metabolizes xenobiotics, proton pump inhibitors, that kind of thing. So you're literally turning off, by taking Nexium, you're turning off one of the things that allows you to metabolize things, which means that it's going to affect you in ways that, you go and you read, what are the side effects? What are the side effects? They're amazing that people would ever take any of these drugs. Adverse effects. Common side effects include headache, diarrhea, nausea, flatulence, decreased appetite, constipation, dry mouth, and abdominal pain. Oh, okay. More severe side effects are severe allergic reactions. Well, why do you have an allergic reaction? Well, because you cannot metabolize what you're putting in your body. Food, drugs, that kind of thing. Chest pain, dark urine, fast heartbeat, fever, paresthesia, persistent sore throat, severe stomach pain, unusual bruising or bleeding, unusual tiredness, and yellowing of the eyes or skin.
I want to take that shit right now.
I know. It's like you want to pass it out to the kids at Halloween, right? It says it may be associated with a greater risk of hip fractures and Clostridium difficile-associated diarrhea. That's C. diff, which is one of the more popular things that goes around in nursing homes. It's where you literally shit comes up into your throat. Like, literally, you start throwing up shit.
Yikes.
It's disgusting. Patients are frequently administered the drugs in intensive care as a protective measure against ulcers, but this use is also associated with a 30% increase in pneumonia. So, in other words, they throw this shit out like candy. That drug that I'm talking about, which was Seroquel, I didn't know it was an antidepressant or an antipsychotic when it was given to me, otherwise I wouldn't have taken it. So the nurses pass them out for sleep, and they're antipsychotics, right? Which literally is one molecule away from LSD. They are psychotics, in fact, but they call them antipsychotics. And so you've got... this is insanity that these nurses just... doctors just pass this shit out without understanding the cytochrome and metabolizing structure. Yolanda was the guest's name in Australia, and she actually, there's tests that you can get. Every patient should technically get a test for their cytochrome P450 count, what they can metabolize and what they can't before they take any drugs. The drug companies have known about this 20, 30 years, but it's kind of like, you remember Fight Club, man? You remember Fight Club where they're talking about the insurance industry and they say, well, we're not going to recall something if it's only going to kill, say, 1,000 people. It's cheaper to let the insurance pay for the death caused by the car accident, by the malfunctioning part, than to replace the part and spend the money on a recall for all people to keep everybody safe.
And so... the entrainment through entertainment, because that has a profound effect on people's you know, on their judgment system, their discernment.
Sure.
Absolutely. So, wow, Seroquel really just turned your autonomic nervous system, like, off. My God.
It wasn't just that. I mean, if you've ever seen, like, movies where they portray, like, crazy people, like people in institutions,
mm-hmm.
that was me. I was fucking bonkers, man. I turned into a mental patient. I had to be... I was crazy. I was angry. I was violent. It was horrible. It's a psychotic.
So have you had somebody that you really, truly were, you know, hated, or you were in a, say you were in a bad relationship, say you were in, you know, whatever, that person was in extreme danger. Not only your life in danger, but you could have done something completely heinous.
Yeah, I mean, essentially, I still had some semblance of my sanity left, but for the most part, I was like those people that are portrayed, you know, as crazy. Just absolutely 100% introverted, did not want to be, you know, it was horrible. And it lasted for a long, you know, 8 hours. It was one of those scariest things I've ever been through, I'll tell you. And it,
well, that was that, it,
woke me the hell up. That was, like, probably 5-6 years ago.
Okay. So, I mean, you were sleeping, and then it kicked in, or just woke you up in the same...
Yeah, no, I woke up because I wasn't breathing, and I realized I couldn't breathe until I concentrated, and I breathed for myself because it wasn't happening automatically.
Wow.
You know, and keep in mind, Seroquel is something that kills, you know... a lot of people. It's actually one of the drugs that they were passing out to soldiers that had returned from the, you know, from the hell that is what we call war, but is not actually war. It's just illegal occupation, right? Yep. They're coming back and they're giving them Seroquel to help them sleep. And all of those soldiers that have been totally vaccine damaged, well, they're dying in their sleep because they're getting full doses. I took about a quarter dose. If I would have taken a full dose, I probably would have died. So this is a drug. There's other drugs like Chantix, which is supposedly to help you stop smoking, that actually says, hey, you know, severe depression and suicidal thoughts accompany this drug. Hey, let's give it to our fucking soldiers.
Yeah.
They're all killing themselves. They're killing themselves because they were over... No, they're killing themselves because you're giving them drugs and they're not able to metabolize them correctly and they're having the worst possible symptoms, which is literally suicidal thoughts.
My brother put on a nicotine patch. I forgot. I don't know which one it was. But his description of what he believes it did to him was he had friggin' murder dreams. Just absolute friggin' demon murder fucking dreams. And I said, I don't think you're going to be taking that, putting those things on again. He was just like, no. No, not at all. So, I mean, wow. This is, again, and there's so many people. As like I'm sitting there and I'm, and by the way, my coworker also within the last 5 years developed a massive dairy allergy where he cannot have dairy. Like anymore. Not, I mean, I know that a lot of people steer away from it. I'm on some level addicted to dairy, but the more and more that I hear, I think that it would probably be a good thing for me to try to get away from it. I don't have any problem digesting it, but that's not.
Usually people have no problem with raw milk. That, you know, black people, for instance, a lot of black people are very intolerant with milk, but when they drink raw milk, everything's fine. Mm-hmm. It's the processing, the radiation, the additives. When I worked on an old dairy farm that had been closed for a while, and we found some of the additives, the vitamin A, you know, they require farmers to add vitamin A, palmate, and all that shit, and it's this white, goopy, nasty, just freaking bottle of whatever it is. It smelled. I mean, it was. I don't understand. I mean, I say I don't understand, but I do, because they're intentionally basically poisoning us. But the people that are having trouble with milk should try raw milk. And if raw milk affects you, then you need to get off milk altogether.
And I mean, I have access to that, and I have consumed that. You know,
don't take raw milk across state borders because it's illegal. It's a drug.
Yeah, absolutely.
Only raw milk.
Yeah. So as I'm talking to my coworker about you know, the drugs, and so at that point I typed in Nexium and stroke, and it came up CBS News. Just really, I mean, if it's on CBS News, and it has the information in there that is like, wow, oh my God. Much like, what was it, Forbes, who had had an article on fluoroquinolones, which is Cipro, and Levaquin, okay, basically saying, don't fucking take this shit, and yet they're still giving it to people. They're still giving it to people. Detached retinas, ruptured tendons, I mean, just... You know, and of course, Patrick said the antibiotic of last. You know, like the whatever doesn't work, that should be used last if nothing else is working. And so, of course, people hearing me talk that, hey, listen, and I sent it over to one of my other coworkers, the article, and of course to the main coworker who had the stroke, the mini stroke. One person just said, and I got immense respect for this person in so many different ways. One of the best young people that I've met in a long time. There's a lot of younger people in their 20s and in, you know, their early 30s where I'm at. Just a group of good people. Misled. This one guy said, you just have to weigh whether you want to, you know, be not have heartburn or whether you don't want to have this. And I just said, you probably just need to do a liver cleanse, for God's sake.
Well, you
know,
yeah,
for things to, you know, for the, because from what I've found is that when the liver's not working fully, and there's a lot of garbage doof out there, which is food spelled backward. Thanks to Patrick on that one. You don't have enough digestive enzymes to break the food down, so you got half digested food in your stomach, and the vapors and everything from that cause the heartburn. So there's so many different holistic.
Well, I'll let you in on a little secret, man. The lemonade diet, or what's called the Master Cleanse,
mm-hmm.
is with the guy that originally wrote that. I think it was in the early 1900s when he actually wrote it, probably the 40s or 50s, but. His original reason for coming up with that lemonade, you know, that fast, was to cure stomach ulcers. Now, this is another aspect of Nexium, where they say, you know, to reduce the stomach acid to cure the ulcer, you know, but the side effects are
bacterial overgrowth.
Yeah, so all you have to do to cure a stomach ulcer in 10 days is go on a fast, drink only lemon, maple syrup, and water. Therefore, your stomach, you know, the acids return to normal levels. You have no food, you have nothing but no drugs, no additives in foods that are causing, you know, wreaking havoc on your enzymes and your metabolizing the cytochromes. And... you know, the one thing that he was adamant about, this guy that wrote the Master Cleanse originally, is that it will cure, back when they could use the word cure and not go to jail, it will actually cure a stomach ulcer in 10 days, which is where the 10-day, you know, concept came from. And then by the time the 10 days is up, your body is completely... cleanse, the coat on your tongue is gone because there's no more mucus in your body, and you're back to this sort of normal functioning body. I have people that have done it for 40 days, and by the end of that 40 days, they look fantastic. They're more healthy than they could ever possibly have imagined, you know. Daniel, my friend Daniel up in Canada that did radio with me, he's done the 40-day cleanse, I think, twice, and he says it's like one of the most spiritually cleansing, as in it clears your mind to where things come into your mind that you can't even imagine, because you have nothing affecting, no drugs, no food items affecting your mind. You think clearly. And he's adamant that, you know, if you ever do start a community one of the tests to get in would be a 40-day cleanse. a 40-day fast, just like in the Bible, you know?
Right. Should I consult a physician before this? Just kidding.
Yeah, you know, that's up to you. I mean, I don't consult. I will consult a physician if I have a broken leg, but I will not consult a physician who literally has swag and propaganda from frickin' drug companies wearing their t-shirts or their hats or whatever it is. I will not go to a doctor and ask anything about medicine unless it's the classics, antibiotics, that kind of thing. Otherwise, all of these pharmaceutical drugs, you know, there's a reason that the Bible warns you against it. It's pharmacopoeia, means witchcraft and poisoning or potions. I'm telling you, man, no legitimate doctor would prescribe anything. The problem is there are no legitimate doctors, except maybe chiropractors. The reason the doctors aren't legitimate is because they're practicing fucking witchcraft and poisoning. They're prescribing drugs they know nothing about. They know nothing about prions. They know nothing about the metabolizing system. If they did, they would, and they had any kind of responsibility other than wanting to get, you know, their $300,000 or $400,000 a year. And there is a reason they're paid that much, because they do prescribe these drugs. You know, if they had any sense about them, if they had any responsibility, and they actually gave a shit, before they prescribed anything, they would be giving this test to test your metabolizers, your cytochrome functions, because that tells you exactly what you can and cannot have. You would never have any ill side effects from any drugs if you knew your cytochrome P450, especially balanced 2D6, that kind of thing. And, you know, if you look up any drug, you go to Wikipedia again, just go look up any drug, they will act, if you look at the drug, it'll have on the sidebar, it'll actually tell you. What I'm telling you is that they've mapped out the entire CYP or cytochrome P450, cytochrome, you know, functionality of the body. They know. This one specifically is an inhibitor for that particular one. They know that these drugs will utterly destroy people like me who have no idea that their enzymes are not functioning correctly. They know that vaccines destroy the functionality of these things. They don't do anything about it, but they have it all mapped out. They know. I can't get that across to you. They know. But because nobody else knows about this, because nobody knows that if you actually did I think it's a DNA test, honestly. It's a swab, I think, of the mouth. If you did that, and you found out what you can metabolize and what you can't, you would never have, nobody would have a response to these drugs, because they could metabolize them properly. You would know exactly what each individual gets. But in our medical system, it's, hey, this drug is for everyone, right? Don't worry that 10 to 20%, just like the insurance thing, the recall thing, as long as it's only 10 to 20% of people that die or have ill effects or have strokes, well, that's okay, because most of them aren't going to sue or don't know they can sue. They don't know about the cytochrome. They don't know that we know that it's going to happen to them if they're right. This is insanity.
Just like my coworker from, you know, not the new one, but my older coworker, not only did the Nexium pretty much cause his mini stroke, you know, initially, but then he had the pulmonary embolism, which was easily, you could say, exacerbated by the continual taking of the Nexium. His doctor said, "Oh, you got Barrett's esophagus, da 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 da." So, in order to heal that or keep that from, you know, he just kind of kept on taking it, and then he, instead of just the stroke. So, I mean, what's worse, the pulmonary, because that can easily kill you. You know, that would if untreated, you know, if things didn't happen the way that they should. Obviously, he's still here, I think. I haven't spoken to him in a while. But, you know, the pulmonary embolism could kill him much easier than a mini stroke, but then who knows? I mean,
yeah,
and of course, the hormone replacement therapy. I know somebody specifically who, you know, she called me up and she said, "Hey, I got this area of my leg, on the inside of my leg, you know, by the knee, that is, it's warm and it's tender to touch." I said, "You've got a blood clot. You've got a blood clot. Get it addressed now." And sure enough, that's what it was. And she had been taking Yasmin, and you've seen commercials about this Yasmin, which is one of many HRT, hormone replacement therapy.
Oh God.
And so she got you know, an ultrasound. They verified that. I said, "You got to stop taking this shit." But what happened was is that around the, you know, the midlife, I guess what are they call, I'm the name is well, no. The women get to the midlife crisis, but the hormonal thing, what do they call it? The change of life, that type of thing. They have a different name for it now. But you know, she would get you know, anxious and all these other different symptoms. And then the doctor's like, "Here, take some hormone replacement therapy."
Dude,
and
then, my brother did the same. He was like, you know, "Dude, I started," I remember it was a couple Christmases ago, he's like, "Dude, I started testosterone shots." Mm-hmm. And I was like, "Oh, shit, you're going to be in trouble." So he's like, "Yeah, man, it's great. I'm losing weight. My you know, my dick's hard. It's wonderful. I have that drive again, you know, that sexual drive." So next Christmas comes along, and he can't afford the, you know, it's too expensive. You know, so people do that, and they get to a point where they think, "All right, the testosterone works. I'm good now. I've been doing it for 4 months or so. I'm good now. I can stop." And they go cold turkey. They just stop the testosterone treatments or, you know, progesterone or whatever. And so next Christmas, he's 300 pounds. And then next Christmas, he's 350 pounds.
Yikes.
Right? And I'm like, "Dude, here's what happened, okay? You replaced a natural function in the body. You started injecting it into your system. That basically was telling your body, hey, we've got an overload of testosterone. Your body's very logical and reasonable. It says, hey, let's stop producing the testosterone. And so when you stop with the replacements, you've already turned off the faucet. You've already turned off the works. And so all of a sudden, my brother's turning into a whiny bitch because, you know, he's got an overload of estrogen." Mm. Because there's no testosterone. There's nothing going into his body. So he balloons up, you know, because he's no longer functioning as a proper male of the species. And I tried to tell him this. I'm like, "You know, dude, if you stay up late at night and you watch TV, you're bound to find a commercial, a law firm, one of those vulture law firms, that says, oh, if you're a victim of testosterone treatment, call this number, you're liable, you know, you can get money," right? So these fly-by-night hormone replacement or testosterone places, they don't give a shit about you. They're selling you something that'll make you, it's like a drug dealer, they'll sell you something to make you feel good temporarily, but it's something then that you're going to need for the rest of your life because you're literally shutting off your own natural functionality.
Clint, and dealers sell joints in the ghetto and cocaine and things like that, right? That, you know, doctors can't be considered drug pushers or anything like that, right?
Well, legal drugs.
Right, legal drugs, right.
Legal.
People think. They think that you know, drug pushers are the guy on the corner that's selling joints to your kid or the guy that's selling coke or acid or something like that. That's what people generally have been.
Yeah, I got to tell you, man.
And it's low T. It's the whole low T thing, right? Because it sounds good. Oh, do you have low T?
Oh yeah, exactly, and of course you do because your whole systems are being ruined by vaccination, by food additives and other drugs, right? So yeah, it's a symptom of some other thing, obviously. Plus, it's natural. Hey, you stupid idiots! Look, I'm 44. I just turned 44. I'm starting to feel that low T because I'm getting freaking old. I'm living past the actual natural age that I should be living anyway because of our modern times. Of course I'm feeling that way. You know what this is? This is the time to gain wisdom. This is the time to actually use that brain of yours because now it's not as distracted by
indeed
all the sex and all the, yeah, the excitement, so-called excitement of the nightlife, you know, all that stuff. Hell, I was out in New York City, man. I was dancing until freaking 11 in the morning sometimes. Yeah. Trust me, I was there doing ecstasy and doing all that kind of, you know, really nasty shit. It affected my sleep, I'm sure, right? So I've been there. I understand. You start losing that sex drive. You start losing that. But this is where wisdom starts to pour in, and that stuff becomes less important. Embrace it. Embrace the fact that you're becoming mature, finally, and wise, and, you know, take that as, okay, I better start taking care of myself. I start better. Change your diet. You don't need any of these drugs. My mom, still at 75 years old, has never been on a pharmaceutical drug. When she goes into the hospital and visits her doctor, those doctors look at her like she's some kind of freaking alien because she's not on one of their prescriptions. She's one that got through the cracks. Why did she get through the cracks? Because she eats like a bird. She eats like a chicken breast and broccoli and nothing else. She's very, very functionally embracing of her old age, right? She's wonderful. And I'm like, why are more people like her? Why can't I be more like her?
It would take someone like that to produce someone like you, dude. So come on, I mean it's the perfect balance. She knew exactly what to do, exactly what not to do, and now she's got she had one of the greatest researchers the world has ever known.
Shut up.
No, you know there's a correlation there. There's a correlation there.
Well, I think about the way she grew up versus the way I grew up. You know, she grew up on a farm in Nebraska with an outhouse.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure that had a lot to do with her willpower and her, you know, her moral compass and all of that stuff. I grew up in Sacramento. The year I graduated Sacramento, all the gang members were moving up. We became the murder capital of the world, or the United States, right? I mean, where I grew up, it totally different than the way she grew up. And so, and I grew up with television. I grew up with the first VCR on the block, that kind of thing. So it's such a different concept, and I'm sure that's why I don't have her power over, you know, mind over food and that kind of thing. You know, I could stand to lose about 40 pounds right now.
Yeah.
But then again, I sit on my ass and want to know why everything is the way it is. So that's my fault.
Right. Well, you know, we can always, I'm actually probably going to try to go to the gym tomorrow morning and we'll see if that works. Let's see if that happens.
That lactose thing. I'm going to try to do it too here. You know, but I don't look forward to the pain. I used to be a bodybuilder. I mean, I was healthy as healthy can be, but
So I mean, you when you got your cancer, was that? I mean, if you did your mom didn't do any of those things either. I mean, she didn't. She eating right, and did she, believe the whole vaccination story? Or I mean, did she get you vaccinated? What was?
Oh yeah, I mean, I've talked to her about it. I try, she's one of those people that's so good and charitable. Her whole life is charity because my dad worked and she didn't. So I'm like, I'm not going to fill her mind with all this shit that I've learned, stuff that she'll not remember, and she'll just think I'm crazier than I actually am.
Right.
And so I, for the most part, I do beg her not to get vaccines, and she stopped, and she said, she's not getting sick.
Right.
She's not getting the flu anymore.
Because, they are pushing that pneumococcal pneumonia shot now, which is definitely going to wipe out large portions of the elderly, for sure. And there are nice little commercials where, they're dancing, all these older people in their 70s and 80s, they're dancing and all this other stuff. Like, yeah, you don't want to stop dancing. You don't want pneumonia to stop you from enjoying your social life in your 70s and 80s. When in all reality, it's most likely going to fucking kill you.
Well, and that's the interesting thing about that is that the flu is not the flu kills like maybe 300 people. The pneumonia that you would get from having the flu and not taking care of it kills thousands and thousands of people. But the flu is like one of the least deadly diseases you can think of.
But they hype it up. They hype it up.
Yeah, and so the side effects that come from the flu, when it's not properly or you're too old to fight it, then, yeah, that kills a lot of people. But the flu itself, it's almost harmless. You just, a little discomfort. Yeah, absolutely. But, and so the notion of, the thing I don't understand about pneumonia, and they're coming out with these vaccines for the craziest things, it's like pneumonia is like as far as I'm trying to remember what pneumonia, you're filling your lungs with fluid. How is a vaccine going to stop that?
Yeah, well, they'll sell it somehow. Like Jordan Belfort said, sell me this pen.
Right.
You see that? Because I watched that last night for the first time, and that'll kind of, I want to segue into the entertainment thing.
I'll tell you what, I'm gonna
absolutely
take a quick break. I'll be right back, man.
All right, cool. All right, talking with Clint Richardson today. We're talking about a number of different things. Our goal, and we're going to hit that goal today, as far as talking about entertainment. I watched The Wolf of Wall Street last night, just the entertainment. We hit some really, really strong points, talking about drugs, talking about his Seraphil near death experience that thankfully did not take him out, and just so many things that are going on. That most people have no awareness of. Absolute no awareness. And it's right there. All these drugs causing so many health issues, killing so many people. And then Clint points out, we did touch on entertainment and the entrainment through the entertainment. Fight Club, where Clint spoke about the insurance and the method of, hey, if it does this much damage, it'll be less damage than if we went this route, or if we went in this direction. So,
and I want to be clear here. Two things. First of all, This was back in the year 2000. A Journal of American Medical Association, JAMA, which is one of the more important rags in the medical industry, reported the statistics for iatrogenic medicine, which had increased quite a bit over the 14 years before that. It says in this JAMA article, if the higher estimates are used, the deaths due to iatrogenic causes, which are doctor-related causes, medical-related causes, but specifically doctor-caused death, usually from some drug or surgery, mm-hmm. and the amount of unnecessary surgery is a whole other topic that is amazing to me, but the deaths due to iatrogenic causes would range from 230,000 to 284,000. In any case, 225,000 deaths per year constitutes the third leading cause of death in the United States after deaths from heart disease and cancer. So, okay, so you've got the third largest cause of death is literally iatrogenic causes, doctor-caused death. Now, if that were a disease, we'd be like, oh my God, mm-hmm. but, oh, well, doctors are causing the death, so it's somehow okay, we have insurance for that, malpractice insurance. But then notice that it says, this is the leading cause of death only after heart disease and cancer. Well, guess what? Any pharmaceutical drug that you see the commercials on the television, guess what? Almost every single one of them says that cancer and heart disease, whether it's stroke or cholesterol or whatever, is one of the side effects of these pharmaceutical drugs. So that means that heart disease and cancer, according to many in the medical industry that have lost their grants for saying so, that means that the leading causes of the three leading causes of death are actually doctor-related. Doctor-related because they're not doing what doctors are supposed to do, fixing legs and mending your feet and, that kind of thing. No, instead, they're being wined and dined by pharmaceutical agents, salesmen, and then they're prescribing drugs because they're getting paid to do so. They're getting swag, they're getting kickbacks. They're participating in witchcraft, essentially, pharmaceutical poisoning. That brings it all together. So the third, the second, and the first leading cause of death, and probably on down the line, are all doctor-related because the doctor must prescribe the drug for it to ever get into your body. Now that, and then of course the vaccine, which is a major cancer causer, it tells you right on the label, besides the prion disease, you've got this major, major industry of death going on, and nobody's talking about it. They report it in their own fucking medical journals, and no one's talking about it?
Yeah, man. I think John Rappaport makes a reference to a Starfield, Barbara Starfield report, which might be the same one or similar to what you're saying, about 250,000 to 300,000 people every year from drugs approved by the FDA, medical procedures. A medical procedure that's pretty common was given to Andy Rooney of 60 Minutes, where anyone out there, I used to watch, my dad used to watch 60 Minutes, and I would say like, why, but and the tail end of it, there was Andy Rooney, and his shtick was, did you ever notice, what would have been the greatest thing if they didn't perforate his bowel, giving him a, checking for colon cancer, and essentially killing him from the perforation, and then being very vague about how he died. It would have been great to hear him say, did you ever notice that doctors are the number one and number two and number three cause of death in America? That would have been great. And he's probably, wherever he is now, he's probably, hopefully, doing his reports. But
they must put the, you know, you watch a drug commercial and there's some random scene of old people being very happy or a bouncing purple ball or whatever. And I figure that must be distracting people enough. It must be doing the trick, because when they get to the part where they finally say, oh, by the way, the side effect might be heart attack or death. Mm-hmm. Side effect, death. Apparently nobody's listening. Apparently nobody gives a shit.
Apparently people,
side effect is death.
Apparently either they're not reading, or while they're reading, they have forgotten the death.
They're hypnotized by the bouncing purple ball because he's so damn happy.
That's right. There he is, smiling. And because he just got his pneumonia shot, and what else are they selling? I mean, it's just it's never ending.
Insanity. I mean, how can you call it anything but organized chaos? Insanity. It's satanic again. It's satanic, man.
Yeah, yeah. And not the guy with the pitchforks on the tuna can. Adversary, man, demonic man. And that's what we got here. We have people that created pharmaceutical companies. And I mean, and I know I spoke to a naturopath a number of years ago, and he spoke about how Rockefeller and Carnegie sent this man out to do a now, of course, you know, this is information that I gathered before. It could have been a deceptive. But there was a report where this guy went around the country, found out what some of these institutions, these health institutions were doing, and then came back with this report. And then after that, then these organizations were, prompted by money. Hey, if you do, you know, instead of doing naturopathic, or if you, let's, you know, you do this, and then, hey, let's just start doing some of this allopathic, which is drugs. And I forget what the report was, but now I'm thinking in hindsight, it's like, weren't these health-related organizations, wherever they were in America, weren't they already controlled? I mean, if a hospital or some kind of clinic was erected somewhere in America, where did the money come from to do that at that time, you know? And why would they have to indoctrinate these organizations after the fact if they had created these health-related organizations? You know, you got these universities, these medical universities that we continually get just bullshit information from, and because a scientist or a professor or somebody says that this is what we found, everybody just kind of falls for it, hook, line, and sinker, because a scientist said it or something like that. So I'm going to try to Flexner report or something. It was a Jewish name. He goes out, he gathers all this information, comes back, and then according to this naturopath that I spoke to, Rockefeller and Carnegie said, hey, listen, hey, why don't you, we'll give you a certain amount of money if you start doing things, you know, more allopathic, in the allopathic path. So what do you know anything about that? Have you heard anything about that?
They started the Rockefeller Foundation in the early 1900s. I put this in my documentary, actually, which is Lethal Injection, free on YouTube. Lethal Injection, the story of vaccination, where there's a timeline in there that kind of shows the progression of how vaccines started taking hold. There's a part in there that says, you know, how even the dictionaries or encyclopedias actually were changed, where it said in the earlier encyclopedias, it says, you know, vaccination should only be, you know, the notion of telling people that vaccination needs to be repeated year after year or whatever, it will turn people off, because obviously that doesn't really make sense. If you're going to acquire an immunity, you know, you're gonna do it, and it's gonna be a permanent thing. And so they were saying in the earlier encyclopedias that, oh, well, we can't tell people, you know, we vaccination once is the proper form. Then a few years later, the new encyclopedia, I think Britannica, came out and said vaccination must be performed, five times in order to get, proper immunity.
Right.
And then the Rockefeller Foundation is formed, and all the vaccines start becoming more commonplace and a normal practice. And so you see the transition. Rockefeller's, the foundation itself seems to be behind just about every unnatural, horrible thing that's ever happened in society. Anything that's been made legal, from medicine to the music thing we were talking about. Right. I mean, it's just horrible. So, you know, to end this conversation and move on, because I'm kind of interested in the hurts, the music thing. Voltaire put it best, man. Voltaire said, and this is in my second book, the art of medicine, consists in amusing the patient while nature cures the disease.
Nice, nice.
You know? So, what is art? You see, this is where terms of art, this is where the different languages become so important to understand, that in the medical profession they have their own language. Well, art is specifically the second person, i.e. not the first person. So you're acting as something you're not. Thus, you're taking a flattering title or a person. Art is the disposition or modification of things by human skill, and in this sense, it stands opposed to nature. Right? A system of rules opposite to science, etc., etc., etc. Art is principle put in practice. The power of doing something not taught by nature or instinct. A collection of certain rules for doing anything in a set form. Artificial is what that really means, and it's the result of or relates to the arts opposed to what is natural. Corporation is an artificial person. You know, in opposition to a natural person, artificial, so you start to understand that this is an art form. Art is a very bad word, because it's always opposed to nature. It's whatever you're doing, all these different fields of science and everything, it's not using the scientific method. It's just a flattering title called medicine or called science, but it's not actual science. It's something completely different. And then you get the word, you know, the concept of the term of art, which is a word or phrase that has specific or precise meaning within a given discipline or field, like the medical industry, and might have a different meaning in common usage. So we say one word, but the judge hears the old Latin meaning, and therefore we're fucked every time we try to talk to the representative of the law. Right? That's the importance of understanding language. So these doctors, they speak their own language. These scientists, they speak their own language. These pharmaceutical corporations certainly have their old PDF or physician's desk reference, PDR, that has an entirely different language. They name every disease that they can create, and then they create a new drug which has side effects that lead to a new disease that they're creating because the drug is so dangerous. So, again, let me repeat that. The art of medicine consists in amusing the patient while nature cures the disease. So we're given a drug, hey, take this for 14 days, you'll be better. Well, I would have been better in 14 days probably if I didn't take that drug too, except now I have 20 side effects and I need 30 new drugs.
Yeah. The artificial, and a fear. It's fear that, oh yeah, if you don't get that treated or if you don't do this or you don't do that, you're looking at something else. And so fear, prestige, you know, that's, yeah, it's like, oh, you're a doctor. Oh, you've reached, oh, you're a professional. Oh, you're a lawyer. Oh, you know. My mom, oh, she wanted me to be a lawyer. She wanted me to be a doctor. but now I'm, you know, this or that. I should have done this or should have done that. And what we see as prestige, what we see as being a professional in this artificial reality is anti, is not natural, is and is being used to do and inflict damage beyond anyone, damage beyond most people's ability to comprehend it.
So do you remember what prestige means?
Prestige. That's a word, that's so, a word that I don't think that we went over.
Okay, so people go to, people select colleges, and they'll even put out lists of the most prestigious colleges, prestigious universities, prestigious hospitals, that kind of thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
When we go and we define the word prestige, prestiges are juggling tricks and impostures. Prestigiation are tricks, the playing of legerdemain tricks, as in a juggling. A prestigiator is a juggler or a cheat. The word prestigious means practicing tricks and juggling. The word imposture, which was used above, means deception practiced under a false or assumed character, i.e., I'm a doctor, I'm a scientist, I'm a lawyer. Fraud or imposition practiced by a false pretender. And finally, legerdemain is a word that means sleight of hand, a deceptive performance which depends on dexterity of hand, a trick performed with such art and adroitness that the manner of art eludes observation. A legerdemain trick, as in prestige. So we go to these, you know, when you look at the etymology of the word, also, it means trick, deceit, imposture, illusion, magic, glamour, dazzling influence, deception, juggler's tricks, to blind, blindfold, and dazzle. It's a derogatory term. Until all of a sudden in the 19th century, something changed, and all of a sudden prestige became something we sought after. Well, I mean, couldn't we say that prestige then is another word for satanic, more satanic than other things, more prestigious? One of the top 10 most prestigious schools? Harvard, Stanford, Massachusetts Institute of Technology, Princeton, Columbia, University of California, Berkeley, Yale University, Dartmouth, University of Notre Dame, and Williams College. Those are the most prestigious schools. And they will give you the most prestigious credentials, the most prestigious little piece of paper that says you are one of the most prestigious doctors, scientists, lawyers in existence. And you can get a job at any of these places because they know that you're more trickable. You're more susceptible to the illusion. You believe in this shit wholeheartedly, and you're going to sell and prescribe as many pharmaceutical drugs and make more people sick and die than other people because they're under your prestige. They're under your tricky. They're under the illusion that your white coat actually means something other than the fact that you're a freaking whore for the pharmaceuticals. That's the truth. That's the truth that nobody wants to face.
Yep. There you go. And I put in the chat room Abraham Flexner and the Flexner Report. He was born in November 13th, 1866, Louisville, Kentucky, of German Jewish descent. Institutions he was connected to, Johns Hopkins, Rockefeller Institute, University of Berlin, Harvard University, and Institute for Advanced Study. So check that out. And apparently he was the one who came back with this Flexner Report. And then at that point, apparently all these infiltrations took place. I probably at this point would say that those institutions were already created by these insidious entities, and that you know, so there's something there. So let's, you know, before the program, we were talking about frequencies. We were talking about entrainment through entertainment, and Clint sent me a document. So, Clint, shed a little bit of light on.
Well, so you were asking about the 432 versus the 440. And as a musician, you fully understand that everybody tunes their instruments, and the record companies utilize the 440 as the standard in the industry. And the question becomes, well, how did 440 tuning become the standard, you know, frequency for tuning all instruments to, when before it was something else? Before it was 432. A Truot actually did a huge study on this and has several articles on his website, which is atruot.wordpress.com or .com. I sent you the specific article because it has the most history of it. And so talking about the Rockefellers, got to understand that I'm just going to read this straight from him because he could probably say it better than me. Talking about being satanic or adversarial to the health frequency of life itself, the impact of 432 hertz is a very harmonic resonance with life. And he actually has pictures of water being bombarded with 432 hertz frequency and a 440 hertz frequency, and you can see this sort of shape being formed, this sort of harmonious snowflake being formed in the 432, and then this horrible chaos being formed in the 440. And you know, sound will cause different, you know, sound in the perfect harmony will cause a snowflake. Sound in a bad harmony will just, you know, sciatically break everything apart until the next harmonic frequency is bombarded, and then it'll form a new shape, a new snowflake that's harmonic with nature. It's a healthy frequency, in other words. And you've got these people out there. Horowitz is Len Horowitz, who's, to me, is Satan. He promotes the love frequency, which is that 538 or whatever. And he goes into that, too, how evil that actually is. Very, very, very bad for your DNA. It's like shattering, DNA-shattering shit. But I want to read just this aspect of it. 440, if you're familiar with the gematria, the language and how numbers are used, you've got 440 adds up to words like die, spoil, destroy, ravished, raped, captivity, violence, works. There is something to say about that notion that seven is the, you know, whatever. And then you go and you look at the 432 in the gematria, and you see peace. You see which is Yasha, right? Soul. You see words that are actually worship, that kind of thing. So, you know, you can go into that part. But what's really important is, he says, who is responsible for changing concert A 432 hertz to the destructive 4.40 or 440 hertz? Right? After giving the whole history of how in all of history it's always been 432, because they knew, even instinctively, that was harmonious to the healthy frequency of life. Ultimately, we've been to the point, we have to point the finger at that biblical synagogue of Satan, right? The fact is, an agent of the godless globalist John D. Rockefeller, a man by the name of John C. Deegan, spearheaded the effort in America during the first three decades of the 20th century. Using Rockefeller funding and grants, Deegan built a mammoth musical instrument factory in Chicago and flooded North America with specialty percussion instruments tuned to 440 hertz. These instruments were often given en masse to schools and university orchestras. Musical professionals accepted the Trojan horse. The gematria, he says, of horse in Greek is also 440. Largesse with a very little questioning. All of a sudden, people started tuning to the drums. In other words, drums do have a frequency, but a lot of people don't know that. All they had to do was retune their strings and other instruments a small 8 hertz up to 440, hardly any difference at all, in order to be in tune with the drums. By the mid-1930s, the takeover of America's music to the devilish 440 was completed. However, in Europe, especially the opera houses, the old traditional opera houses and orchestras of France, the 440 movement was met with fierce and very vocal opposition. In Germany, Australia, Joseph Goebbels, backed by the very popular composer Wagner, spearheaded that 440 hertz movement, or renaissance, for the new Germany. In fact, they focused
So he was pro 440 or pro 432?
No, this was a worldwide effort to go to, yeah, so he was pro. Just selling, it's no different than doctors selling pharmaceuticals they don't know anything about. For the very reason the French musicians were extremely outspoken opponents of the 440 hertz movement happening in America and Germany, the UK and the City of London financial district of the House of the Rothschilds successfully removed 432 hertz and replaced it with 440 hertz in much the same manner the Rockefeller's agents Deegan did in America during roughly the same time period. Following World War II, the Rockefeller-Rothschild money cabal installed the United Nations in New York City, which in turn established the ISO International Standards Organization. So the ISO International Standards Organization in London, who in turn declared the 440 hertz to be the standard tuning of instruments worldwide. So there you have that notion of consensus, right? Immediately after 40,000 petitions from internationally recognized professional musicians and musical organizations were collected and presented to the ISO. These 40,000 plus petitions, consisting of millions of signatures, were similarly ignored and dismissed because people were protesting. Why change a standard that the world had recognized and honored for over 3,000 years? What was so horrific and wrong about 432 hertz that it should be altered? So he goes into the top reasons. He says, or it's the governing 432 hertz is the governing frequency of the created universe as measured by planetary alignments and orbital movements. The ancient covenant Hebrews used 32 hertz tuning on their instruments, and it became the basis of worship and oblations in the Hebrew temple and tabernacle, later the standard keynote pitch of Christian music worldwide. Despite the petitions, they changed the pitch to 440, where A equals 440. In October 1953, by the International Standards Organization, Maria Reynolds' book, Intervals, Scales, Tones, and the Concert Pitch C at 128 Hz shows evidence that 440 and raising concert pitch above scientific C, the prime 108 hertz, and A at 432 hertz, she says, quote, that 440 disassociates the connection of consciousness to the body and creates antisocial conditions in humanity. So, I used to go to these nightclubs, they'd be playing 440 hertz dance music, right? Imagine what that's doing to your soul, essentially. Professional musicians have declared that 432 music seems to them to be non-localized in nature and can appear to fill a room, whereas 440 can be perceived as directional or linear in sound propagation. So, in other words, the 432 hertz fills a room because it's harmonious with the very air that's causing the frequency, but with the 440 it cuts through. It's a more directional tuning, and so it'll go right, it's more directional, which means it can be controlled more. The original Stradivarius violins were designed to be tuned to only A432. Many professional musicians have complained that the raising of concert pitch to 440 or higher caused undue stress or warping of their very expensive acoustic instruments, such as their Stradivariuses, their violins, and that 440 damages a singer's vocal cords, especially those of professional opera singers.
Well, it's even the 440 is even out of harmony with the very substance of the instrument itself.
Oh yeah, good,
whatever the instrument is made of, it's out of harmony with that substance as well, and then of course.
Well, I mean, if you think about it, the air is the speaker, right? I mean, what a speaker does is it goes out. You know, if you look at a waveform, which is a representation of what's happening in the air, basically, the speaker goes out when the line is up, and the speaker comes in. When the line goes below zero. So that's why the speaker is going so fast, because it's matching that waveform. And that is hitting the molecules of the air. The air is then amplifying that sound and bouncing off air molecules until the point where it's no longer powerful enough so that you can hear it, right? Which is why bass in the lower wave travels so much farther than the high frequency, yep. And you can actually feel the bass way far away.
We were speaking with Jimmy about the Schumann resonance that night. Does this correlate with the 432? The Schumann resonance that we were...
Yeah. It's all... Because you're talking about harmonics. You're certainly familiar with harmonics. So, you know... When I play a string on a guitar or I play a piano note, you're not just hearing that note, you're hearing how it affects the entirety of the piano. And so the harmonics all are behind that one single note. And that's why a sine wave, when you play a sine wave, it sounds like shit. It's not very organic, because nothing in nature makes a sine wave, only an artificial structure can make a sine wave, because it's always going to have that frequency that it's bouncing off of and making your voice and everything sound more full. Mm-hmm. So Dr. John Coleman, in his seminal book, The Committee of 300, documented the elitists' desire to control the collective consciousness of humanity. Their use of the A440 hertz as pitch control in mass media, so in other words, your TVs, everything is coming at you at that specific digitally controlled pitch, pushed hourly and daily through radio and television as the British invasion of rock and roll was, according to Dr. Coleman, intentionally designed to create antisocial behaviors and to increase chronic disease states in the general public. The inventor of the cymoscope, John Stuart Reed, declared on his Facebook page that 432 hertz is a harmonic of like frequency. It speaks and resonates directly with our cells. Our cells communicate with each other via infrared light, so I imagine that when they receive music in 432 hertz, they are in joy. The conscious that you... may not be aware of it is a conscious that you might not be aware of. It's a sense of good feeling, of joy, and you're not necessarily aware that it's happening. But most of what goes on in our bodies is subconscious, thankfully. You can read more about that, you know, on Cymascope, Cymascope. Is his website. 432 is the only resonant frequency that is capable of naturally reproducing what is called the Pythagorean musical spiral in the water of the human cell. That's why water is so important. Clean water that is correctly, you know, that doesn't just sit around and stagnate. It's the same sequence of growth that all life follows. It utilizes the formula of pi, also known as the golden mean, and is also found in the Fibonacci sequence throughout all of nature. So if you're a fan of quote-unquote sacred geometry, 432 is in harmony with all of that shit you talk about, right, that you hold sacred. you know, and this article, there's this big, long list that we can keep going and keep going, but you get the idea of why they wanted to take that beautiful concept of what music was, classical notion, and turn it into something that was more of a detrimental, unharmonic, antisocial sort of behavioral mechanism that they can control. Mm-hmm. Now, this isn't conspiracy theory. This is history. This is very verifiable.
Yeah.
So it makes you want to, you know, retune your guitar, doesn't it?
Yeah, but whenever I've thought about that, though, I've always thought that, you know, that if I were to bring it, you know, to that, the A down to that particular frequency, that the strings would be like fluttering on the neck. I mean, when I first started playing, you know, Van Halen 1, you know, 440 A, right, the A would go down to... would go down to D. The E would go down to D. That was the tuning for that particular for that record. And I'm not even sure what was that. So a whole from an E from an A to a D would be how many hertz?
Oh my God, I'd have to go and I can't remember that theory anymore because I've been in it so long.
Right, right. So that's something that I mean, I've got a third guitar here that I could, you know, that I could tune down to that.
And so C in concert pitch is 128 hertz, and A is then 432. So that gives you an idea from A to C of how many hertz you're going.
Okay. One more time with that?
C prime is 128 hertz. Concert A is 432.
Hmm. Yeah, I'm definitely going to look into that.
It's worth you know, looking into. It's definitely... And I got to be honest with you, Shelley. You know, here in the last couple minutes, man, more and more, I keep getting maybe, you know... If you believe in this sort of thing that you're getting some signs from the universe or whatever, I seem to be getting a lot of signs from a lot of different people that gravitates towards music. That music is so powerful and so, you know, it's such a tool that can be used exactly as we're talking about, that it almost, I'm almost tempted to just stop doing all this shit and get back into music. I keep thinking about you and a couple other people that, you know, I'm a songwriter, you're a hell of a guitarist. I mean, I keep thinking that we should really actually do something.
All right, man. Well, there you go.
It would be a way that you could promote all the stuff we talk about, plus you could promote the 432 hertz. You know, you could play and probably make people feel really freaking good in 432 tuning.
Yeah, and they wouldn't even know why. They would be like, you know what? All that crazy shit that you were talking before, when you play your guitar and say it, I'm more susceptible to your brand of brainwashing.
Well, no, if that's the idea, is to tell them. Make sure they know that you're the reason that it feels, you know, you're not so angry, you don't want to mosh at my concert is because I'm playing you a frequency that's peaceful, that's actually designed to make you feel good, not bad.
Well, in addition to the yogurt show and last week's evolution show, this might be the third greatest show ever, and I think we're onto something. And,
right?
And with Patrick's, you know, 2 cents, I think that we're on the cusp of something that is going to totally transform the conscious landscape. How about that? God, I'm even speaking, you know, with more clarity these days.
It's amazing when you start speaking your words and attempting to speak beautifully, when you start actually trying to speak poetically or parabolically, when you start trying to speak so that it's a loving intent, that every word you feel and you recognize that the word is only a representation of the real, and that you're worshiping the real, not the word, things start changing in your life. Things start changing in your interactions.
Yep. Got about 30 seconds. Absolutely. Everybody, thanks for hanging out today. We are definitely going to,
What? Rounds a minute, try to stop them. Don't put that on your wish list. That's retarded babble. Protesters make the hit list soon as they start to rabble. Fear nothing but fishes in the barrel. It doesn't have to be Christmas for a carol. Some decorate with ornamental decorum. Some perform shock and awe on Hanukkah and Purim. That's where my job come in. I am a blessing to the mercenaries or the corporations selling weapons to them. Any potential competitor step into them. I'm authorized to knock them out and stick a GPS into them. They want to sell your